In the 1995 film The Usual Suspects, the name Kaiser Soze strikes fear into the most hardened criminals. Soze killed his own family simply to frustrate a group of Hungarian mobsters who were attempting to do the same. Once his family was out of the way, he went on a rampage, burning everything and everyone who knew him or could positively identify him. Soze's anonymity allows him to move through criminal circles effortlessly, like a phantom. He's the sort of man who could murder his whole family and then effortlessly evade police custody for decades afterwards. But Soze is not merely a myth from the underworld. He's not the devil incarnate either. Men like him are real, and they walk among us, hidden in plain sight. Welcome to Villains, a Parcast original. I'm Alastair Murden. On this show, we look at the world's most infamous villains, both real and imagined. We aim to understand how villainy translates from history into our greatest fictional stories. You can find episodes of Villains and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. To stream Villains for free on Spotify, just open the app and type Villains in the search bar. At Parcast, we're grateful for you, our listeners. You allow us to do what we love. Let us know how we're doing. Reach out on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast and Twitter at Parcast Network. And if you enjoy today's episode, the best way to help is to leave a 5-star review wherever you're listening. It really does help us. This is episode 10 of our series on postmodern psychopaths. Last week, we discussed the character of Kaiser Soze, a semi-mythical figure who baffles criminals and law enforcement alike in The Usual Suspects. He's a mastermind whose face is unknown to almost everyone, but whose imposing reputation casts a sinister shadow. The name Kaiser Soze is now a cultural shorthand for a monster who can hide in plain sight, and screenwriter Christopher McQuarrie based him on a very real monster, an American mass murderer named John List. The List home fell silent in the fall of 1971. At first, neighbors assumed that the family, John, Helen, Patricia, Frederick, John Jr., and John's mother Alma, were all away on a trip. But as the silence wore on, the absence became harder to ignore. The Lists stopped coming to church. Patricia, the passionate young actress of the family, stopped showing up to rehearsals for A Streetcar Named Desire, where she was an understudy. On December 7th, after nearly a month with no sign of the Lists, neighbors finally summoned the police. Officers forced their way into the house to find it empty and astonishingly cold. The thermostat had been turned down. Christian hymns were echoing through the rooms. The spacious Victorian had the air of a funeral home. Soon after, they discovered why. Helen List and her three children lay in the ballroom. They were all riddled with bullet wounds. 84-year-old Alma was found in her apartment upstairs, shot through the head. John List was gone. Not a trace of him left behind. This discovery of the bodies sent shockwaves through New Jersey. How had such a mild-mannered, deeply religious man turned to murder so suddenly? There had to be a rational explanation. Soon, an explanation did surface, but it could hardly be called rational. A number of letters were found in John List's desk, along with the two pistols that had been used to commit the murders. A 9mm Steyr handgun and a .22 caliber revolver. Before he killed his family, John had written these letters to his associates, including a thorough confession intended for the pastor at the local Lutheran church. He stated, "I know that what I have done is wrong from all that I have been taught, and that any reasons that I give will not make it right." He lists four explanations for killing his entire family. The first was that he could no longer support them. He had lost his job weeks earlier, but had been pretending to go to work to keep up appearances. Second, the prospect of his family going on welfare was too appalling for him to consider. He would rather his children die than grow up in a poor environment. Third and fourth, his daughter Patricia's devotion to her acting career and his wife's growing reluctance to go to church made him feel like his family was straying away from their Christian life. His solution was to kill them all so they would go to heaven now, before it was too late for them. And of course, he killed his mother because seeing what had happened to the rest of the family would have been a tremendous shock to her. In John's mind, the murders were a generous action, but in reality, it could not have been crueler. His eldest son, John, fought back, and he wound up shooting the boy 10 times. He concluded his confession with funeral arrangements and a final aside about his own motivation. "I'm sure many will say, how could anyone do such a horrible thing? My only answer is it isn't easy and was only done after much thought." He was the rare murderer whose motivation was made crystal clear, even as he vanished into thin air. And it was this moral certainty that inspired The Usual Suspects' key villain. Shortly after the release of The Usual Suspects, Christopher McQuarrie discussed John List's influence on the creation of Kaiser Soze. Regarding the character's backstory, he said that, "Given Soze's upbringing, his personal code, he really believed that the only way to protect his family was to kill them. Death was a more honorable way out. His children and his wife have already been ruined, scarred for life." The only explicit reference to Soze's religious beliefs comes when Verbal Kint, later revealed to be Soze in disguise, offhandedly mentions that he believes in God. Though Soze's religious beliefs are somewhat vague, his absolutist approach is eerily similar to List's. Soze saw his family corrupted by the outside world in a rather extreme way. The trauma of being assaulted and held hostage by Hungarian gangsters essentially robbed him and his family of their perfect life. To quote Verbal, "Soze would rather see his family dead than live another day after this." According to McQuarrie, "Previous to that event, I could see Kaiser regarding his life as sort of idyllic. That while he was probably a drug dealer or some kind of really filthy criminal, he came home to his beautiful wife and children, and that elevated and legitimized him, sort of exonerated him from what he did. Taking this untarnished facet of his life away was crucial in turning Soze into the murderous crime lord that everyone in the film fears." One could argue that this transformation is an extreme version of how List feared his daughter's acting career would take her away from her faith. His family was not assaulted by gangsters, but in his own mind, the outside world was muscling in on him, corrupting their Christian values. And rather than risk his family living a tainted life, both men decided the best approach was to kill them and take their pain away. And both men disappeared, escaping any justice for their actions. Soze went on to become an urban myth. List, on the other hand, became a wanted fugitive. And a mass murderer like List could not evade law enforcement forever. Long after the trail grew cold, he resurfaced in the eyes of the public in a rather unlikely way. Up next, we'll discuss the unconventional way John List was captured and continue exploring real-world examples of Kaiser Soze. Now back to the story. Kaiser Soze may be a defiantly enigmatic presence in The Usual Suspects, but screenwriter Christopher McQuarrie frequently cited the real 1970s mass murderer John List as a primary influence on the character. They both murdered their families due to perceived corruption from the outside world, List because they were straying from their Christian values, and Soze because his life as a drug dealer ultimately brought armed men into his home. On a surface level, both cases seemed like the perfect murder. The suspects managed to get away without any reprisal. For a while, at least. Soze would eventually be identified by a fellow criminal. List faced the possibility of being recognized by one of his own neighbors. By May 21st, 1989, the List family murder case had been cold for almost 18 years. But a television segment broke the case wide open again. In its second season, America's Most Wanted was one of the most popular shows on TV. At the end of each episode, they show pertinent information about killers still at large and ask their viewers to call in with any information. But with List, they didn't have a recent photograph. The most recent image they could find was when he was just 19 years old. So the producers of the show reached out to Frank Bender, a sculptor in Philadelphia. Bender had a reputation for his ability to reconstruct the faces of badly decomposed bodies for identification. The producers paid him $1,500 to take John List's image and create a bust of him that looked 19 years older. Bender worked with a criminal psychologist named Richard Walter to discuss how List would age, how stress would wear on him, what glasses he would choose, how much weight he would have put on. Until finally, they settled on a rough estimate of his appearance. When the episode aired in 1989, it caused Wanda Flannery in Denver, Colorado, to sit up in her seat. The bust bore a strange resemblance to a neighbor of hers, an accountant named Bob Clark. Clark was taken in for questioning, and when his fingerprints matched List's military records, he was arrested. Just a few months later, on February 16, 1990, Clark admitted the truth. He was John List. He had successfully evaded the law for almost two decades before he was captured. His trial was a public sensation. Many fixated on just how long he had managed to hide. Some even noted that he bore a passing resemblance to D.B. Cooper, who famously hijacked an airplane in late November 1971 and disappeared. This was wild speculation, as it would mean that List killed his family in New Jersey on November 9th, then traveled all the way to Portland just to hijack another plane 13 days later. While this is possible, it's more likely that, just as we saw with Kaiser Soze, List was becoming something more than a mere criminal in the public eye. He was transforming into an all-powerful, demonic urban legend. The way America's Most Wanted exposed List's otherwise ironclad cover story is echoed in The Usual Suspects. Soze's most valuable asset is his anonymity. The film begins with a burning boat full of 27 dead bodies, only one of whom strictly needed to die to protect Soze's identity. He's willing to go to any length to rub out witnesses who've seen what he looks like. By the time a sketch of his face finally reaches the police station, it's too late. He has slipped away again. Will Customs Agent Kuyan put the sketch of Kaiser Soze on America's Most Wanted? Or will federal agents continue to be frustrated by a foe who always eludes capture? A few years after the film's 1995 release, America found itself facing a foe with a similar level of omnipotence, who frustrated a number of attempts at capture and facilitated mass destruction and terror. Osama bin Laden. Last week, we discussed a Time article by Tony Carone that referred to bin Laden as a geopolitical Kaiser Soze, whose name possessed more power than a single man could ever have. Osama bin Laden formed the militant organization Al-Qaeda in 1988, and throughout the 90s, he launched a series of attacks on the United States. His role in the 1998 U.S. Embassy bombings in Tanzania and Kenya landed him on the FBI's most wanted list. But it was the September 11th attacks that turned him into a household name. From 2001 to 2011, Osama bin Laden was the boogeyman who stood at the end of the United States' war on terror. Despite the far-reaching violence he commanded, he was untouchable and very rarely made public appearances. His methods of working even seemed to echo Kaiser Soze's. His henchmen would often not be alive to interrogate after they committed their acts of terror. At first, the comparison between Islamist extremism and mob-related crime may not seem obvious. But Soze's mysterious lawyer Kobayashi frequently made reference to the villain's international business dealings. He was apparently involved in selling weapons and nuclear technology to countries around the globe. As we mentioned last week, this reflects the unease of shifting international politics in the time between the Cold War and the War on Terror. In that sense, Soze serves the same purpose as Osama bin Laden. He crystallizes that chaos and confusion into a tangible enemy. The fear Soze's name strikes into his enemies is almost worth more than the acts of violence he helps facilitate. Tony Carone's Time article ominously states, "If bin Laden didn't exist, we'd have to invent him." Middle Eastern politics are a complicated game, something the average Western citizen doesn't have the education, time, or patience to comprehend. To fight the massive beast of terrorism, we had to give it a face. Carone continues, "Few serious intelligence professionals believe bin Laden is the puppet master atop a pyramid structure of terror cells. It's really not that simple. But personalizing the threat makes it seem more manageable. Bin Laden may be out of reach right now, but by making him the root of the problem, we hold out the possibility that his ultimate removal from the scene will make the world safe from Islamist terror." A comforting thought, but a delusion nonetheless. This assertion could also be applied to Kaiser Soze. If he didn't exist, which for all we know he didn't, someone had to invent him. Just as every terrorist movement needs its leader, every organized crime ring needs its kingpin. The sheer mention of Soze's name serves to strike fear and obedience into other criminals. And for law enforcement, the semi-mythical suspect gives their muddled investigation a target. By halfway through the film, it feels as though US Customs might eradicate all crime forever if they can just answer the simple question, who is Kaiser Soze? Of course, once we have our answer at the very end, we realize this too was a comforting thought, but a delusion. Whether Soze is a cold-blooded supercriminal or merely a small-time conman spinning a yarn to escape punishment, it no longer matters. He won, bamboozling the federal agents for long enough that he was able to walk free. And now, they'll never find him again. Soze's principal goal, as far as we can tell amidst the web of lies he spins, is to protect his legend as a faceless man who cannot be killed. Preserving the myth of omnipotence is what keeps him on his metaphorical throne. When discussing the name Kaiser Soze, the skeptical FBI agent says it could be an old badge, a hex sign to keep people from screwing with you back when a name meant something. Similarly, Kuyan refers to Soze as a shield, meant to protect the real person behind the immense and unseen criminal empire. A name has a power. And even beyond his death, Osama bin Laden's name still represents the kind of shadowy terrorist cell that can cause mass destruction and death without a single survivor left to interrogate. In the years since The Usual Suspects hit the screens, the name Kaiser Soze has evolved in its meaning. When McQuarrie was writing the character, he was a more Machiavellian John List, an example of what could happen if that same kind of person was a gangster rather than an accountant. After the film's release, he became a stand-in for international terror. And, as of 2019, Kaiser Soze has a new implication, one that reflects on the nature of Hollywood itself. Stick around to hear us talk about the real identity of Kaiser Soze. Now, back to the story. Kaiser Soze is one of the most iconic villains from 1990s Hollywood because of his flexibility. Everything about the shadowy master of manipulation could be a lie, a cheat, or some sleight of hand to mask his true intentions. By the time The Usual Suspects reaches its legendary twist ending, we realize that Soze has been in control of the narrative the whole time. He transcends the traditional role of villain and becomes something even more sinister. He is the concept of a lie itself. Watching The Usual Suspects a second time becomes increasingly frustrating because even the most basic facts of the narrative rely on the word of the story's villain. We are left, like Agent Kuyan, staring around at hundreds of people wondering which, if any, is the true culprit. And what sort of crime even happened in the first place? This flexibility has allowed Soze to stand in for a number of sinister forces in reality, from John List, an accountant who murdered his family to save their souls, to Osama bin Laden, the face of global terrorism who successfully evaded capture for over a decade. But in 2017, the movie industry itself turned in on Kaiser Soze, giving him a different and more metatextual meaning. The character was particularly significant to the actor who played him, Kevin Spacey. Spacey was known mostly as a character actor in theater through the early 90s. But in 1996, The Usual Suspects secured two surprise wins at the Academy Awards, one for Best Original Screenplay and a Best Supporting Actor win for Spacey. This effectively launched his career. Spacey would win another Oscar for American Beauty a few years later and go on to headline a number of extremely high-profile projects. By the 2000s, he'd become an A-list star. His career continued its upward trajectory through 2013 when he was cast in the political drama House of Cards, winning acclaim and accolades once again. And then, in 2017, it all came crashing down. It began with an interview with actor Anthony Rapp, who accused Spacey of making sexual advances toward him at a party when he was 14. Once the word got out, story after story began to surface. Actors with similar accounts piled up, with some even accusing the actor of sexual assault. According to his co-star Gabriel Byrne, filming of The Usual Suspects had been shut down for 2 days because of Spacey's inappropriate sexual behavior. Though none of the accusations have been proven in a court of law, the charming, charismatic actor was suddenly seen as a pariah. He was recast in several high-profile projects and unceremoniously removed from his leading role in House of Cards. The name Kevin Spacey has become to many a synonym of the abuse of power in Hollywood, in the same way that Kaiser Soze became synonymous with unknowable Machiavellian evil. As of 2019, Kevin Spacey has no new projects lined up in Hollywood or the theater. Like Kaiser Soze, he vanished without a trace. His downfall reveals a horrific similarity to the story of Soze, the role that secured his place in Hollywood history. If the allegations are true, it means that for all these years, Spacey had controlled the narrative, using his charm to project the image of a harmless, innocent man to the public. Eventually, it was an identification by one man that unraveled the story he'd so carefully spun. This metatextual reading of The Usual Suspects is entirely accidental. As director Bryan Singer has faced down his own wave of sexual assault allegations throughout his career. And in a strange way, that only makes the parallels stronger. As we discussed with regards to Bin Laden, it's comforting to think that once we catch one major figurehead, their entire criminal world will collapse. But revealing Kaiser Soze's identity didn't bring us any closer to the truth about what happened on that burning ship. Killing Bin Laden didn't end Islamic extremism. And for each sexual predator who falls from grace in Hollywood, it seems like five more appear in their place. At the end of the day, the ones with power control the narrative, and even after they've been caught, they're still capable of spinning the facts in their favor to escape punishment. On Christmas Eve of 2018, Spacey released a video on YouTube where he speaks in character as the villainous Frank Underwood from House of Cards, more than a year after he was fired from the show. In the video, unsubtly titled, "Let Me Be Frank," he claimed he was not done yet. He said, in a sinister southern drawl, "They're just dying to have me declare that everything said is true and that I got what I deserved. Wouldn't that be easy if it was all so simple? Only you and I both know it's never that simple. I can promise you this. If I didn't pay the price for the things we both know I did do, I'm certainly not going to pay the price for the things I didn't do." All in all, the video is bizarre beyond explanation. It was released exactly as news broke that Spacey was being charged with felony sexual assault of a teenager. So we can assume it was an attempt to drown out the noise. Defending himself while in character as a ruthless, amoral murderer was a bold choice. He seems to be drawing a connection between his own real-life misdeeds, which he simultaneously denies and admits to, and the crimes of the charming, fictional villains he's famous for playing. In fact, he says, "I showed you exactly what people are capable of. I shocked you with my honesty. But mostly, I challenged you and made you think. And you trusted me, even though you knew you shouldn't." All these things, except perhaps the bit about honesty, apply to both Spacey himself and his most iconic characters, including Kaiser Soze. The difference is that, in fiction, no actual people are being harmed. We can explore the philosophical and aesthetic merits of manipulating the truth, eschewing morals, and blurring the lines that define our society. Film, in that sense, is a space where we can take the things that horrify us, blow them up onto a 50-inch screen, examine them, understand them, and defang them. Good villains help us make sense of the senseless world around us. How could Richard Kuklinski kill dozens of people without any regard for life or death? Watch No Country for Old Men, and you'll understand. Why did Ed Gein make masks out of the faces of his victims? Watch Psycho. Why can't we simply brainwash criminals into behaving better? Watch A Clockwork Orange. Perhaps what's so enduring about Kaiser Soze is the way he moves between these boundaries of truth and fiction. In his story within a story, he turns himself into a shadowy arch-criminal with near-demonic powers, a villain that everyone around him can both fear and admire. But for all we know, this whole story is a complete lie, and Soze is merely a smooth-talking con man trying to weasel his way out of a crime gone wrong. For the federal agents and for the audience, we're left with the same unanswered question that lured us in. Who is Kaiser Soze? Early in his interrogation, Verbalkind says, "To a cop, the explanation is never that complicated. It's always simple. There's no mystery to the street, no arch criminal behind it all. If you've got a dead body and you think his brother did it, you're gonna find out you're right." He mocks the idea of an obvious solution because that's what Kaiser Soze is. The devil hiding in plain sight. And as soon as you see him, poof, he's gone. Thanks for listening to Villains. We'll be back next week. You can find all episodes of Villains and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify. Not only does Spotify already have all of your favorite music, but now Spotify is making it easy for you to enjoy all of your favorite Parcast originals, like Villains, for free from your phone, desktop, or smart speaker. To stream Villains on Spotify, just open the app and type Villains in the search bar. And don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast and Twitter at Parcast Network. I'll see you next time. Villains was created by Drew Cole and Max Cutler. Villains is a Parcast Studios original and is executive produced by Max Cutler. Sound design by Andy Waits, with production assistance by Ron Shapiro and Carly Madden. This episode of Villains was written by Robert Teamstra, with writing assistance by Drew Cole. I'm Alastair Murden.